We thank David Polkowitz, Dr. David Polkowitz, for spending Shabbos with us. We again, once again thank Ron and Jessica Leibowitz, children of Adolfo Korn, for sponsoring in memory of Adolfo, who we remember fondly. Those who remember him remember him very fondly. I talked about this morning. And on the occasion of the Bar Mitzvah, the Karen Arizocha to attend of Heshi, Adolfo's grandson, in March in Brookline. So Dr. Polkowitz has very important things. If you didn't, by the way, if you weren't here for the other sessions, I suggested you interact with those who were at the sessions. A lot of great information that we should all know. So Dr. Polkowitz, thank you.
Okay, thank you. So it's been an amazing Shabbos. It's been a pleasure being here. And again, any words of Torah we talk about tonight is in memory of the neshama of Adolfo, who I am so sad I never knew him. Because everybody's been talking to me about him, and kind of a mixture of quiet humility and connection and brilliance, all in one, and in a way that's really, he would have been an amazing person to know. So, but it's been a privilege to be able to talk in his memory throughout Shabbos. So I'm going to talk about, I was asked to talk about the concept of coping with loss, coping with stress, bouncing off the time of the year. So the first of three or four, depending on how long it takes me to do this, categories I wanted to talk about is there's a fascinating pasuk that we just read today. So there's the following passage where talking about different kinds of suffering a person could have. And it says in the pasuk about different kinds of problems that could come our way. And it says, "Umitzauhu ra'os rabos vitzoros." So there's an interesting language. The language is that there's ra'os, which Rav Shach says refers to the actual misfortunes that could befall us. And then there's tsaros. We all know what tsaros is, but Rav Shach explains the word tsaros is different. You have the actual misfortune, but tsaros is the subjective experience of suffering, which could be viewed by different people in different ways. It's very different. The very same thing can be viewed differently based on how we filter it through the prism of our subjective experience. Story number one. It took me this long to get to the story this time, so you know. So, story number one. About a year or so ago, I was at a weekend. Actually, it was a weekend of people who were, I won't go into exactly what the weekend was about, it was actually families of people in prison. And it was to give support to the kids and to give support to the mostly mothers. And it was a very interesting weekend. But one of the organizers of the weekend, Chassidish guy, Satmar Chassid, comes over to me and he says, "Let me tell you a story." He said, "Last year, it turned out that I was the perfect match for donating my kidney to somebody. It was somebody who was literally about to die. And we did testing, I was a perfect match, somebody I didn't know, just a total, no connection to me whatsoever. So I went into the hospital to donate my kidney." He said, "Through some quirky piece of fate, at the very same time, his mother was diagnosed with having a tumor on her kidney. She had cancer. And she had to have her kidney removed. And it turned out, with a divine plan, that they had their surgery on the same day. So the people of the hospital put them next door to each other in the room in the hospital. So he had exactly the same procedure. It was an identical procedure, and she had the identical procedure. So he told me he considers those days in the hospital the happiest days in his life." He said it was remarkable. It was remarkable. He says he was floating on joy. He said, could you imagine saving somebody's life? He said, could you imagine what that feels like? He said it was literally, he said, I wasn't feeling pain. He said it was just this unbelievable experience. And he said his mother in the next room had exactly the same medical procedure. And she suffered incredibly. She suffered absolutely incredibly. She was depressed. She was in intense pain. She was pulled down. So for her, the Rose was transformed into Tsaros, which we can understand, into something that was subjectively viewed as something horrible. And for him, the very same event was viewed completely differently. That's story number one. Story number two, I don't know, we have Dr. Norman Fried. I almost said Rabbi Dr. Norman Fried. Norman, okay? But Norman Fried is this remarkable, very gifted therapist and a nationally renowned expert in trauma and grief, and is a amazing resource to the community. So I don't know, this may have been before, it probably was before your time. We worked together at North Shore Hospital. So this was many years ago. Many years ago, when I first started my career, I was assigned, like a junior person would be, to be the psychologist for the pediatric hematology oncology unit. In other words, working with kids with cancer, it was considered probably the most intense job you could have back then. Because back then, cancer, unfortunately, wasn't what's turned into, thank God now, into what's often a chronic illness and treatable illness with a much better prognosis. Back then, they hadn't figured out exactly how to treat it. And I was called, as if I was very young. I used to be young, everybody. Okay? So I was very young. And I was called to consult with a family who had a little six-month-old girl. And the girl was unbelievably cute. And she was being treated, I think, for leukemia. And she, there was something about her crying that just pierced through everybody's heart. It was literally destroying her parents, who just couldn't stand it, but yet they felt they had to be there. And the doctors and nurses were also going crazy. He just asked me to consult on it, I mean, but by coincidence, and maybe by a little bit of arrogance on my part, back then there was a psychologist I was working with in our hospital. His name is Alan Strohmeyer. Now, Alan Strohmeyer, real music fans will recognize his name. He used to be the guitarist for Aerosmith, okay? Could you imagine giving up that job, okay? Because he decided they're into drugs. He decided that they're all going to overdose or they're going to end up in Vietnam. He was convinced. And he was a very smart guy, so he left Aerosmith and got a fellowship to Rockefeller University. That's how brilliant Alan is. And he worked on the first team that developed biofeedback at Rockefeller. And he would talk to me about it. We'd schmooze about it. Our offices were down the hall from each other at the hospital. So I went to him and I said, Alan, I have a hunch. Can you come with me? In the night, we'll sneak in. You know, we got permission, I guess, from whoever was the doctors. Let's see. Let's set up your biofeedback equipment with these, with this baby. And let's see what happens when she comes. And this is what happens. She was set up with equipment. And the equipment measured her stress response, her skin temperature, her everything. All the measures, all the physiologic correlates of stress. And what we found immediately was the more she cried, the better she felt. The louder she cried, the more her stress went down. She was telling us that for her, this Ra'os transformed into Tsaras was very different than everybody who loved her felt. So we called the doctors and the nurses and the parents to the bedside. We hooked her up to the biofeedback equipment, and we were able to show that literally she was, literally the tears were tears of comfort. You know, tears release stress hormones. Tears of a certain type, emotional tears, can make you feel better. They can make you feel better. And from that point on, every time she cried, everybody on the staff said, thank God, thank God. Totally transformed it, Rose Tsaras. So why did I open with these two stories? Because it's about one aspect of dealing with trauma and dealing with loss. Everybody here has been through difficult times in life because it's part of what life is about. Everybody here has experienced loss and has experienced stress. But the wisdom of those words and the wisdom maybe of those stories is that to the extent that we could tap into the perspective shift, the Hebrew word nechama, as I've told you in the past, in another talk I gave on this topic here a few years back, the Hebrew word nechama, according to Rabbi Hirsch and according to Rabbi Schwab, doesn't mean comfort. It means shift in perspective. So usually know what a word means by the first time it appears in the Torah. The word nechama first appears in the Torah when God is looking down and is upset by what he sees, because man has not turned out how he had hoped, and ki nichamti ki asisa. That's the first time we have the word nechama in the Torah. You know, I'm reconsidering, should I have made man? Should I have created the human race? It was a shift in perspective. And then what Rabbi Hirsch and what Rabbi Schwab always talk about is what happens after loss. Eventually, people get to a point that they have that shift in perspective. So I'll share with you, even though I think I might have shared this with you once, the work of Dr. Salovey. So Dr. Salovey is the president of Yale today. One of the leading psychologists in the country, and his research before he came to Yale was on something called post-traumatic growth. The way people could grow through the tough times in their life. Nobody chooses it, but sometimes the shift in perspective is post-traumatic growth. So among the studies that he talks about in his research is the hotel maid study. The hotel maid study goes like this. Take a group of hotel maids. Not the easiest job in the world. They're randomly assigned to two groups. One group is assigned to the group where they do their regular hotel maid thing. The other half is assigned to a different group. And they're told you're part of an important wellness program to help us understand how wellness shows itself in the workplace. So when you put the sheets on a bed, when you make a bed, you shake the sheet, 1, 2, 3, put it over the mattress, 4, 5, 6, you're building up those biceps, a little bit of a cardio workout. As you put the bedspread on, you make these movements, and as you vacuum, you're working your upper, you can see I know nothing about exercise. But this is basically what they do with these hotel maids. And what they find within six months, the women in this group, first of all, it wasn't the plan. They lose a lot of weight. They weren't told to lose weight. They just lose weight. In 6 months, they lose weight. The other thing they do very quickly is they start feeling great about their job. They love their jobs. The depression levels that were tracked at the beginning of the study give way to higher levels of happiness. It's transformative. Why? They did exactly the same thing every day as the comparison group. But the meaning was different. The meaning, it had purpose. And it shifted their perspective about their jobs. So what Dr. Salovey talks about is the concept of post-traumatic growth. And he finds in study after study that when people choose, going through tough times, to focus, doesn't mean you're not allowed to feel terrible. It doesn't mean that it's not valid to be pulled into the abyss and to experience sadness and to experience all of the normal reaction to the abnormal challenges that life sometimes gives, puts our way. But what he shows is that to the extent that you're able to, with time, can't do this right away necessarily, see this, what's going on with you, is an engine of growth. To see it as an engine of growth. He talks about it using the language of his cousin. At the time he developed this, he didn't know it was his cousin, Rabbi Soloveitchik. Soloveitchik, as many of you know, is short for Soloveitchik. He's a Soloveitchik. Just as descended from the Brisker dynasty, is the Rav from YU is descended. And through some kind of, my father calls it ancestral alchemy, okay? They come up with the same concept, right? Yiyud versus Gorol. There are two ways to see tough things in life. You could see it as Gorol. I'm a log floating on the river at the mercy of the current. Or you could see it as Yiyud. This is destiny. There's a purpose behind this. And this could be, ultimately, a source of growth. This could transform the Ro'os into Tzaros. There's a shift in word, just one shift in word that I heard at a High Lifeline retreat from Rabbi Hauer, rabbi in Baltimore. He talked about two ways of seeing, in his case, he was talking about the Ayel Nechaz Bespach at the Akeda, which, what's that laning, the Akeda, that comes on? That comes to Rosh Hashanah. Oh, that's coming up. What a coincidence, okay? So it's coming. I knew it was around, I knew it was Rosh Hashanah, but I just, whatever. Okay. So it's coming up. And he talks about the Akeda. And he talks about the ram caught in the thistle. That ram that was created at the dawn of mankind on the first Friday, Ben Hashmashos. And he says there are two ways of seeing that ram. You could see the ram as stuck, or you could see the ram as positioned. And when you go from stuck to positioned, and you're able to see yourself ultimately as positioned, there's a reason for this. I'm not a log floating on the river at the mercy of the current. You get into a different place that ultimately may bring the kind of nechama that comes with the shift in perspective. And I'll end this with a beautiful Medrash Tehillim that I know many of you know. And I know I used last time I spoke on this topic here. Ilu nafalti lo kamti, ilu yashafti b'choshech lo haya arli. Magnificent words. To me, it's the most magnificent sentences I've ever come across. If I didn't fall down, I never would have gotten up. And if I never sat in the darkness, I never would have appreciated the light. So that's part one. That's part one. Part two has to do with what we read today about Shira, what we're reading this coming week in Ha'azinu, about the role of song, the role of art, the role of the nonverbal in dealing with some of the challenges in life. I'm going to take you through this a little bit. What's the role of music in response to suffering? What's that Shira all about? What does that mean? What are we talking about? An expert on resilience once said that art is making something out of nothing, humor is making nothing out of something. But I want to talk a little bit about the making something out of nothing, that part with music. And I'll start by reading to you an amazing story from my close colleague and friend, Rabbi Dr. David Fox, a rabbi and a dayan in Jerusalem, and a professor of clinical psychology, and all around brilliant man in the University of California system. So he talks about the following, Rabbi Dr. Fox. He talks about, I'll just read to you what he writes on this topic. Our times of glory have been animated and elevated by a reflex of unity and celebration in song and dancing. This is embedded in our soul and in our collective memory. Then he quotes Rabbi Pinchas Katz, teacher of his. And listen to this amazing story. As the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, closed in on the shul in one of the large German cities, the men in the congregation broke from their typical stately, composed style and spontaneously clutched hands and danced gracefully, slowly, in a circle. No one planned it. No one seemed to know what had motivated it, other than some deeply embedded sense that this was the way to give honor to God in that final moment before capture, torture, and deportation. This is the essence of the Jewish dance. Something in us, something in those German Jews, the most horrifying part of their lives, that without planning, it was literally almost like embedded in their Jewish DNA to respond to this horrific, horrific kind of torture and this horrific evil by holding their hands and dancing. Now, let me move on to the second part of this. Rabbi Butler, you're still here? Excellent, okay. So Rabbi Butler and I were talking about this concept earlier today, and I'm going to tie this to Shira also. So it says in the Talmud in Brachos, Agra de Hespeda Yalula, the reward for giving a eulogy is the wailing, is the crying. Tears can sometimes be a gift, like I said before, like that baby. It could release stress hormones. But on the passage of Vayidom Aaron, where Aaron hears of the horrible sudden loss of his two sons, here's what the Abarbanel said, going back over the centuries. He says, Abel perish vayidom Aaron, hu shenepach libo v'hoya ke'eben. Isn't that amazing? He says, Aaron's heart turned to stone. It turned to stone. Domein, an inanimate object. V'lo nasa kolo b'vchi uv'misbeid ke'evel aval banim. He couldn't respond like a mourner of a father having normal kind of mourning reaction to loss of his sons. Gamlo kibel tanchumim emotion. He couldn't accept any kind of nechama. He wasn't ready for nechama. He wasn't ready for tears. He was stone dead inside. Vahadibur embo. Vahadibur embo. He was beyond words. I think I told you last time we spoke on this topic that my friend Bessel van der Kolk, a trauma expert, once showed me the fMRI of a patient of his who was stuck in the stairwell at 9/11, barely got away with his life. And he showed me, what is this patient of his, who happened to have been a psychiatrist, what does his brain look like when he's reliving the worst moment of his life? He's having a flashback. And when I looked at it, the first thing I thought is Vayidom Aaron, because the language centers of the brain were shut down. He was literally rendered speechless. That's what happens to the brain. In a place of overwhelming trauma, and overwhelming loss, and overwhelming sadness. And you're not necessarily ready for the words that ultimately will bring you to a place of nechama, of shift in perspective. But listen to this amazing quote, going back to music and Shira as an antidote. Listen to this. This is from a book called A Natural History of the Piano by Stuart Isaacoff. An amazing story. And with this, I'll end the Shira section. In 1804, the pianist Dorothea Ertmann, who had studied Beethoven's work with the composer, lost her young son. Mrs. Ertmann was so stricken that for weeks she was unable to weep. Hearing of her grief, Beethoven invited her to his house to offer his condolences. He didn't say a word. Beethoven did not say a word. Did not say anything. He played for more than an hour, Stuart Isaacoff tells us, until Ertmann began to sob. When she told the story later, many years later, to Felix Mendelssohn, she said that Beethoven's playing, his music, told me everything, and at last brought me comfort. Nechama, the shift in perspective, sometimes comes through the vehicle of the comfort of song, the comfort of art, the comfort of going from stone to flesh, going from stone to feeling. But one of the pathways in that way towards Nechama is everything symbolized by what Hazinu is and by what Shira is. You know, anybody who looks at the Torah when you read Hazinu, we just read it at Mincha a few hours ago, it's wide open spaces. It's wide open spaces. It's a way to breathe. It's a way to just let your soul breathe. And sometimes we occupy this space in a way that we're lifted by it to a point of comfort. So that ends part two. We're good? Okay, am I depressing everybody or we're okay? Okay, let's move on. One more thing, since I seem to have a little bit of time, you know, I have time according to the plan here. I'm going to share with you a story that I know I shared with you in the past, but it's my favorite music story. My favorite music and Shira is a source of comfort. And I know when I tell this story, it makes me, it inspires me. So I'm going to share this story with you. And for most of you, it's going to be a review. It's the story of the five coping rooms in Israel, right? One of the main points that you have to make in a talk like this is one size doesn't fit all when it comes to dealing with grief, with loss, with stress. Everybody has their own style of coping. Three times in the Gemara, we're told, "Daga b'levish yashren," if you have a worry in your heart, if you're coping and struggling with a problem, with stress, with worry. So there's a disagreement between Rav Ami and Rav Asi, Chadam Yashchen Amidato. One way of thinking about it is get your mind off it. Hesach Adas. Don't think about it. Distract yourself. Chadam Ar Yasichen Alacherim. The other way of dealing with it is talk about it. And it's often very different. Sometimes the woman is the talker. Sometimes the man is the distractor. Sometimes it's the other way around. And sometimes talking, when you're not ready to talk, makes you feel worse. And coping comes in many different sizes, and all the research seems to be showing you have to find your way. Maybe over time, your toolbox of coping mechanisms expand to include actively dealing with what's going on. But in Israel, after a horrible bombing in the Frank Sinatra cafeteria, I was giving a talk at the Jerusalem Trauma Center. I was summoned to go with a colleague, Ruth Paterenzik, famous psychologist specializing in trauma, to break the news to the kids that their beloved counselor had been killed. Their staff member of the camp had been killed in the bombing at the Frank Sinatra cafeteria. And the director of the camp didn't let me and my colleague anywhere near the kids initially. He put us in a corner. And he got up and he very wisely told them the horrible news. And he told them, "We have five coping rooms. one room, write letters to the parents of your dear friend about what a wonderful woman she was. The other room is a writing room. Write your feelings. I'm sorry, that's the writing room. The other room was a tefillah room. Pray. The other room was the talking room. Talk to these guys in the corner over here, these psychologists, he said with wailing Israeli code. And then the other room was a art room. And the other room was a music room. Okay? And the kids were told they could go from room to room throughout the day. And they did. They did. They didn't. The writers wrote. The music kids did music. The talkers talked. And the art kids did art. Nobody chose prayer, which is a talk in itself. Maybe one day I'll give my talk on spirituality and why a group of modern adolescents did not choose prayer. Might have been too soon for prayer, might have been whatever. There are a lot of theories as to why. Nobody switched. It was an incredible lesson to me because coping comes in different flavors. And one size doesn't fit all, and you shouldn't get judgmental. If you're married to somebody who's a talker and you're not, or the way you deal with things is to throw yourself into one area that gives you comfort and other family members don't, the research shows that initially in the early time, there's absolutely, that's the way it should be. And you have to respect the coping style of everybody. Rav Ami and Rav Asi, nowhere in the Talmud does it say that one was right and one was wrong. Nowhere does it say it. So the story that I will review with you again before Rosh Hashanah and before Hazinu, and as we're talking about Shira, is the story that I discussed the coping rooms with a group of people in New York at the first anniversary of 9/11. A woman comes over to me who was in the audience, and she tells me the following story. With this, I'll end this section. She said that her father was one of the bunkmates of Elie Wiesel in the concentration camps. That famous picture of the him in his barracks. On one side was her father, who was a Vishnus Chassid. On the other side was one of my best friends in childhood's father, who would always tell me about his experiences with Elie Wiesel. That's a talk in itself, but not for now. And she said that Elie Wiesel was giving a talk in Manhattan the week before. And as she's leaving her house, her father, the Vishnus Chassid, who's still alive, knows she's going to hear Professor Wiesel speak. He says, please give him my regards. Give him my regards. I'm not sure he'll even remember me. But let him know I'm so proud of him. I'm proud of his Nobel. I'm proud of everything about him. So she goes and she waits online after the talk. And she says, you know, my father isn't sure you'll remember him, but he gives regards. So immediately, tears come to Professor Wiesel's eyes. He says, remember him? Remember him? He didn't tell you that the only reason I'm alive is because of him. It's only because of him. Shali shalo, anything that's mine is his. She says, what are you talking about? He says, there was a day that was beyond endurance, even by concentration camp standards. It was just beyond endurance. And a group of Russian prisoners of war got a hold of some rat poison. And they went, and they go online, the Russians, and they quietly take the poison to end their life. Adolescence is a very impressionable time, especially when it comes to suicide. Elie Wiesel looks at all his friends. They all look at each other and say, look, they're going to kill us anyway. Let's take matters into our own hands. And every adolescent in that section of the camp joins the line behind the Russians. He said, we fully intended to take our life that day. These are going to be our last minutes on this earth. He says, except for your father. Your father, the Chassid, retained his faith even in that horrible place. And he goes to the side of the line, and he breaks into the ancient vision of Sanigan. For ani ma'amin b'emuna shlema b'vias ha-mashiach. I believe in ultimate redemption. He said, the song broke our suicidal spell. One by one, we left the line. One by one, we held hands, and we danced around your father. Go home and tell your father that anything I've done, Professor Wiesel said, a blessed memory says, anything I've done is because of that song. Shira, Shira. It's the source of comfort, the source of space, and often the source of nechama. Part three. Here goes. I'm going to talk about optimism. Rabbi, help me. I can make this the end, which would have me finishing at 12 when you originally planned for me to do. Should I go with that? Let me go with that. I'm okay. Or else I could add a whole other thing I developed. That's okay. I'll go to that. Okay? So I'm going to talk about optimism. I'm going to talk about the ability to focus on the positive, the ability to get nechama in that way. And I'll just share with you the story of Yosef and his brothers in terms of optimism, and the story of, can I quote it? I think the story from our friend about his mother. Yeah, she's written books, so this is public knowledge. So we have a good friend, Dr. and Dr. Bitton, Rochelle Bitton and her husband Avi. Avi's mother, I once spoke about this topic in the Young Israel of Hillcrest many years ago in a different context. And Avi Bitton was our host. And he's walking home with me from Shul as we're going back to his house. And he says, you could talk all you want about the importance of developing optimism in the face of stress. He said, but it's all genetic. He says, it's all genetic. You either have it or you don't. If you are an optimistic person, you're going to have it. But let's say you're not. Let's say you're wired in a way that you color everything dark. Okay? By the way, some people have that netia. They have that. I firmly believe you could shift it. And you could learn. And there's a lot of stuff in psychology about how to teach yourself to be an optimist. But we won't go into that right now. He told me the following story. His mother, who's an author, who's written brilliant books about her experience in the camp, she was the youngest survivor, many people think, of Auschwitz. And nobody quite knows how she managed, but somehow she was this little girl, I forget how young she was, when she was waiting on the selection line at Auschwitz, and she selected to live. I don't know why. She had chayim. Evidently still has chayim to this day. He tells me, here's optimism. My mother's on the line, getting ready to have her tattoo put in her arm. And as she's waiting in the line, she says to herself, I'm going to have a very long life. And if I'm going to have a tattoo on my arm, again, from Rose to Soros, you know, I'm going to have the best looking tattoo I could possibly have. And she looks around the lines and she figures the longest line must belong to the most meticulous tattoo artist. And she goes on the long line, and Avi tells me, if you could ever get my mom to show you her number, it is beautiful. It's beautiful. To this day, it's an unbelievably legible, and she wears it as a badge of honor. It's a badge of survival. Again, hard to quite understand that level of optimism, but to the extent that you could do it, what could you develop? Here's the story, which we all know, but put a little bit of a spin on this story with the Medrash. We all know the story of Yosef and his brothers. Yaakov dies, right? And now that he dies, the brothers and Yosef go to bury their father. And their fear, right from the beginning, that as soon as their father is dead, it actually says this in the commentary, as soon as their father is dead, Yosef, the second most powerful man in the world, is going to kill them. And they go, they bury the father, and now the second most powerful man in the world, Yosef, turns to the brothers, and the first words out of his mouth, the Midrash tells us, "Let's go visit the pit." You could imagine the terror. You could imagine the horror. You could imagine what's going through the minds of the brothers, who never did, if you read the Pesukim carefully and you read the Mefarshim about, never really did a direct apology. Never really, the forgiveness that we talk about, it's a whole other topic, but there was some evidence that things weren't totally settled between them. And what does Yosef do when he gets to the pit? He looks down into the pit, and here's what he does. As the brothers look on, thinking these are the last moments of their life, he looks into the pit, filled with snakes, filled with scorpions, and here's what he says. Baruch she'asa li nes b'makom hazeh. Thank you, God, for doing a miracle for me in this place. You delivered me here. By the way, another piece about here and recovery from loss. I have a niece who was in a terror attack during the Second Intifada. Second Intifada, right? And amazingly, she was in a restaurant. What was it, a cheesecake? It was some restaurant back then, Cheesecake, the new status restaurant. And an Israeli soldier, a woman named Mayan, throws herself on top of her and saves my niece, but she's killed. She's killed. If you go, you'll see, what's it called, Yad Mayan there? It's called, just called Mayan. There's a right at that spot. There's now a well and memorial. So listen to the different ways my niece dealt with the impact of this. It's the most important event of her life. So one thing I've known, because I've walked with her in that area, she says the bracha that you just heard that Yosef gave every time she walks by there. She stops and she says, Baruch she'asa li nes b'makom hazeh. She celebrates the day of that attack as a birthday. Her first child, a brilliant girl who just celebrated her bat mitzvah, her name is Mayan. And as soon as Mayan was born, my niece flew to Israel as soon as she could, and she introduced Mayan to Mayan's parents. And she embedded into her life a combination of gratitude, a combination of keeping this alive, a combination of doing many other things. But she's integrated it. She's integrated it into her life in a way that gradually gave her some nechama and some recovery and brought her to the next level. Let me end with something I love, okay? It's called Vidui Hamashlem. So you're about to say Slichos. Some of us said Slichos before. When we said Slichos, there's Vidui. You know, Ashamnu, Baganu, Gazalnu, Dibana Dofi. Listen to what the first Rev Cook said about this. Olas Ria or Olas Ria? Says Raya? Olas, whatever. Huh?
Raya.
Raya, Olas Raya. Okay? Here's what he does. This is the Vidui of Rev Cook, called Vidui Hamashlem. Let me give you a drop about the history. And it's not a bad way to end. If you want a copy of this, I say it. I carry this in my machzor. All my students carry it in their machzor because it makes you feel good about that aspect of Vidui. So what Rav Kook says the following. He says, Al-Kan k'shem she'esh to'elas gadolo l'tikun ha'nefesh. Vidui, we say, and we're going to be saying from tonight all the way through till Yom Kippur. So it's very important. It's tikkun hanefesh. It's a correction. The vidu havonos to confess our sins. It's good for the soul. But you know what he says? Gam kein bevidui hamitzvos. It's equally important, he says, or it's important to confess our good deeds. To confess our good deeds. L'man yismach bahem bilvavo, to gladden our hearts. V'yachseik archos chayav b'derech Hashem, to strengthen the pathway of our life in the path of God. Listen to the vidui hamashlem. Ahavnu, we've loved. Bachinu, we've cried. Gamalnu, we've done good stuff. Dibarnu yofi, okay? We have spoken words of beauty. He'eminu, we've believed. Hishtadalnu, we have tried. Zacharnu, we've remembered. Chibaknu, we have hugged. Ta'amnu sefer, we've delved into svarim. Yatsarnu, we have created. Kamahanu, according to that Ksava of Kabbalah, you know what that means, Rabbi? Kamahanu is the...
Goosebumps.
It's actually, it means, but goosebumps, it's when your skin rises. When your skin rises because of the thrill of doing something good for somebody. It's from the Shoresh Chaf Mem Hei, which means from V'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha, that we should love our friend like ourselves, a meaning, something that excites us and gives us positive, you know, that tingling feeling in your skin. This is all planned, everybody. This is all very much planned. So we have all of that. Let me take out my... I shut my phone off. Okay. Here...
That was one of your recommendations earlier.
Yeah, Rabbi, can I just have a... you're going to put it on? Could somebody give me their phone? I need to read the rest of this. Thank you. Thanks so much. Thank you. Let me finish reading this. Okay? So here we have it. Kamahanu. Lachamnu avor tzedek. We have fought for righteousness. Mitzinu es hatov. We have looked and found the good in others. Nisinu, we tried. Sarnu liros. We have turned to see. Asinu asher tzivisanu. We've done what you commanded us to do. Peirashnu. We've separated ourselves when we need to. Sakanu, sadaknu lufamin. There are times that we really were good people. Karanu b'shimcha. We cried out in your name. Ratzinu, we have strived. Samachnu. And tamachnu, we've trusted. It's a beautiful way to talk about the optimism that sometimes is an unbelievably amazing kind of source of comfort and nechama. So if I could pull together the final words here and bring some light on the subject, that was well done. You know, it was very hard to organize this and to get it going. But let me thank you. Oh, I didn't even see that it was you, Dr. Zatz. Your father's neshama should have an aliyah. Dr. Zatz has yard site for a truly remarkable, remarkable man tonight. So, let's pull it all together. So we pull it all together in terms of some of the lessons from this time of year on coping with loss, coping with stress, coping with trauma. So we started by talking about sometimes the subjective experience of Rose and what we do with it. And we talked about that crying baby who now becomes a source of comfort. We talked about the man who gave his kidney, who had a totally different experience than his mother, who went through the identical experience. The power of perspective and the power of going from stuck to positioned. And then we talked about what, everybody? I wasn't listening. We talked about song. We talked about song. We talked about Hazinu. We talked about the space between the letters. And we spoke about the visceral kind of dancing as the Nazis closed in on a Scholl in Germany. And we talked also about the story of the song that saved Elie Wiesel's lives and the lives of many other teenagers in the camps. And we talked about how that brought them from the stone heart without words to a place of music and a place of connection. And a place of reconsidering, a true place of nechama. And then we end with the power of trying to develop gratitude, trying to develop a focus on what we have. So may we all have a new year filled with song, filled with nechama, and filled with connection, filled with everything that's in this room. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, and shalom.